extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Not from New York, New York. You are listening to Extra Time presented by AT&T 5G. I'm Jordan Angeli. I couldn't lead in with being in New York, New York when I'm not. I'm in Columbus, Ohio, and I'm here with my pals, Charlie Davies and Joe Lowry from the AT&T 5G virtual studios. We've got a big show today, you guys. A lot to talk through coming up on this show. MLS, first Liga MX once again for the CCL title. We'll recap that NYCFC Seattle semifinal and look ahead to the matchup with Pumas in the final. It should be a good one there. We've got some defensive DP midfielders. You know, Extra Time is all about the DP players, but especially when they're D-mids. Hello. Since he's got a new signing that we'll speak about. And there's plenty of games this weekend. Good games to that note. So we'll dive in and preview week 7 action. Joe, Charlie, this is like a family reunion for me, I feel like. I get to be back with my guys. How are you guys doing, Joe? It's nice to see you. Welcome. We provided a MLS assist here today.
It's a reunion, Jordan. You and I have got MLS Assist resurrected, and you and Charlie have got the U.S. Soccer Podcast back and running. I am pumped. It's great to be here.
I know, and Charlie, you're looking good. You got a beanie on, though. I'm a little confused. Is it spring? Is it not? Are we going into warmer weathers?
It was for like a hot second, and then all of a sudden it's 46 degrees. So, beanie, I got the fireplace on behind me. I'm feeling good. Nice
wow.
And toasty.
You are toasty in there. You've got your hot tea. You are ready to spill some tea today, I think. So it should be a good one. Joe's not complaining about cold weather. In Arizona, no. He is nice and warm all of the time. But Charlie and I really know the ups and downs of these northeastern and midwestern springs. Mm-hmm. We appreciate when the sun's out. But we're going to bring the sunshine here today, guys. There's a lot to talk about. I think we just dive straight in and we go to the most recent game, CCL recap from last night. New York City FC hosted Seattle to a 1-1 draw, but Seattle takes the semifinal in a 4-2 aggregate scoreline. The Sounders were the best team in CCL, and since they have the most points through into the final, they will be hosting the second leg of the final. So that first leg is going to be the week of April 25th in Mexico City. And Pumas will host in a midweek matchup like we're normally used to. And then Sounders will get to host the second leg. I already know that Anders is planning to get extra time out there. Everybody's booking their flights, right, Charlie?
Yes.
That is something I think y'all can't miss, because you've been talking about CCL glory for years, and this could actually be when it happened. So before we get into that particular question, let's recap what happened. Last night, Charlie, you and I were on the watch along with Kaylin and Allie, and you had mentioned New York City FC. They came into this game knowing they needed at least 2 goals, depending on the scoreline. They made it a game, but you spoke to Ronnie Dyla and his tactics and how he went into this game. Do you think that there were the right tactics implemented, or how do you feel like New York City went into this game and maybe changed some things so they could attack a little bit more going throughout the game into the second half?
Well, they knew going into this match that they needed to score 2 goals.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were able to kind of conquer this matchup, they needed to win 2-0. It probably would have been really difficult to win this game 2-0, just given the way that Seattle Sounders are set up. But I think he had the right tactics and implored with this team as far as, hey, we got to be aggressive, we got to be on the front foot, keep possession, create chances. But I don't think he necessarily got it right with the player selection and maybe the formation. So as you saw in the second half, when he made that adjustment and took Acevedo off, who is he's a ball winner. He's a player who picks up second balls, but he's not a creator. He's not a player who's necessarily great in possession. he's not going to create chances. And you needed someone to come on and do that for you. They brought on Pereira, and just that added midfield boost of an attacking player made a big difference, a huge difference. Seattle still had their chances, but they weren't capitalizing on them early. And then you had Rui Diaz against the run of play. He scores, and it was for them, it was kind of like, ah, Rui Diaz, what do you expect? I score these goals. And it kind of changed the complexion of the tie, because then Dialight went in at halftime and got aggressive and made those changes. And had he, I think, gone that way from the very beginning, I think their chances would have been that much greater to win.
Mm-hmm. Charlie, you mentioned that last night, and that's why I started with it, because I didn't mind the having Acevedo in there because of the ball winning capability that he has against a Seattle team who maybe will try to counter a little bit more often. Could he win some of those matchups? Joe, what'd you see? Like, did you like the start of this game from New York City? Did you like what they implemented right away? Are you in Charlie's boat thinking like maybe it wasn't aggressive enough to start off with?
I'm in Charlie's boat in that I don't think the first half was great from NYCFC. I'm not sure there's many folks out there that do. I don't think Ronnie Dyla got it wrong from the start of this game, though. Acevedo, I think, is much more of a ball progressor maybe than we're giving him credit for. Not that he was good in this game, and he hasn't really been all that good for NYCFC this year in MLS. So there is that fact. And so, Charlie, I am with you on that. But I think if you run out just a lone six, and this is what happened in the second half, right? It's Alfredo Morales as the six, and it's Santi Rodriguez and Tyus Magno as the two eights. That is, to me, it feels like you're just asking for Jordan Morris and Christian Roldan and Nico Ladero and Albert Rusnak to knife right through you on the way to getting Raul Ruiz Diaz the ball. Because that's the script that this game was always going to have, right? It was always going to be NYCFC out on the front foot and Seattle trying to beat them on the break. Weirdly, that's not where the Sounders goal comes from at all. It comes from a lovely sequence of possession on that left side and a great ball on the floor to Nuhu, and Ruiz Diaz finishes near the top of the box. But in general, I think if you're Ronnie Dyla, there still has to be this element of game management. If you just throw the bathtub, is what Stefan Fry said, and NYCFC threw at them in the second half. If you throw the bathtub at the beginning, you know, then you're certainly running the risk of giving up that away goal early, and then you're going to need three at a minimum. So mm-hmm. I think there is difficulty there. I will say I don't think NYCFC started well. One of the tactical things, if we set the personnel aside for a minute, one of the tactical things that I didn't love so much is Santi Rodriguez playing as the 10, no Maxi Morales dealing with that trunk injury. Gotta love a good trunk injury, guys. Dealing with a trunk injury, and then no Maxime Cheneau. So Santi Rodriguez is starting at the 10. For me, he wasn't influential enough in the final third, right? So often, I don't know if you guys noticed this on the watch along, you all did, but he was drifting into the box rather than dropping and pulling the strings. He would pull the strings in deeper possession. He'd hang out between the lines. He and Tati are this team's creators, you know, when Maxime isn't in the lineup. But for me, he was in the box too much and not distributing enough. And in the first half, I think that's what NYCFC missed. Things opened up in the second half, and so it wasn't as big of a deal. But in the first 45, that's the adjustment that I would have made if I'm Ronnie Dyla. Stay a little deeper, Santi. You create, yeah. You pull the strings rather than pushing him up in the box. He's not really a threat in that space. I mean, I know he scores the goal in the box, but it's a different situation.
Well, the game was really calling for a player like that at the top of the box, because there were so many Sounders that had dropped deeper. You'd mentioned the game flow of this one, and City had their chances. It wasn't as if it wasn't there. When we look at a tweet from Game Flow, and they're looking at the XG on this one, two of those good chances come in the first half, but seven chances come in the second half. Mm-hmm. So the second half, the adjustments that Dyla made, to Charlie's point, really did help this squad. But it just wasn't quite there. Do you think, Charlie, before we transition to Seattle and really dig into all the things that they did well, not only in this match, but to lead them into a position where they just needed a draw or a result to go their way, does City take some positives out of this? Does it help them get back on track? What did you like about, missing a couple players, key players for them? They could still manage to create, get some good looks on goal, and, you know, all in all, get a result, a draw. It's not what they needed in this situation, but does that help them going forward in this season?
Yes, and this is a team that's not worried. They're not in a precarious position, because this team won MLS Cup. There's naturally going to be a drop-off.
Yeah.
You go from the highest of highs, it's a short turnaround, you go to CONCACAF Champions League. Naturally, it takes a little bit to get going again. What I was impressed about with New York City FC last night was the chances they were creating. and whether it was set pieces, whether it was crosses, whether it was playing 1-2s or combining, they have the quality. Yeah. If they weren't creating those chances, then there's the issue. Because you say, look at all the talent that you have. How can you not create a variety of opportunities? They're doing that. So it's just a matter of time for me. I think Tyus Magno is a player that will eventually continue progressing and get hot. I think Tati Castellanos, again, is one of the primero number nines in MLS. Santi Rodriguez.
He's got a neck tat, so.
Oh, exactly. We'll get into that.
We'll get to that. Yep.
I think Santi's best suited on the wing because he loves to come inside. Mm-hmm. And that, it, I think, plays to his qualities because he's aggressive. He likes to get in the box from the weak side. So I don't think the 10 is probably his strong suit for what this team needs.
Yeah. And I think, though, a question, too, of maybe this is who is going to fill in that spot if Maxi Morales isn't there? And that's always been the question, Joe, for City, and something that maybe what they implemented in the second half in structurally shifting some things might be the answer that they take and go forward. Maybe after some rest days as well, knowing that this team has given a lot already this season. But that could be a positive for Ronnie Dyla, who is thrown, you know, he is a guy that is not afraid to shift formations.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky one, Jordan, because for a long time I thought maybe Santi is the guy who can replace Maxine. It felt like this logical progression from one generation to the next. And I still think that's probably what David Lee and this New York City FC front office is thinking and what Ronnie Dyla is thinking. And I'm not ready to throw that out, but I agree, Charlie. I think Santi's best spot now certainly is on the wing. The challenge, Jordan, was shifting to that 4-3-3 shape that we saw from NYCFC in the second half is, you know, maybe Keaton Parks isn't quite as comfortable higher up the field. And so he takes on one of those eight roles, I guess. And maybe that's the balance you need. Maybe he can do that. But it's a little more complicated. But I think at a certain point, if you're without Maxi, you do have to try different things. And we saw in the second half, especially with Pereira causing some real problems on the right side, cutting in on his left. And we saw some quality in central midfield and Tati looking somewhat comfortable. I think that could be a good look for them going forward.
The big question for New York City FC, I think, is there's some disappointment after that game, just also knowing the chances that they had at their feet, at their, you know, it was right there at their fingertips to take this one and at least push it to potential penalties. It could have gone there with how many chances they created. So we'll see how they recover from that mental lull. That's difficult, and I think that's going to be the big question. Should we talk a little bit about Seattle? Since,
oh yeah,
let's do it.
They are going to CCL finals, which they knew they didn't need to win. They just needed to manage this game in a proper way. So we saw a completely different tactics from Seattle, which we were expecting going against City away from home. Charlie, before the game, you had mentioned Raul Ruiz Diaz didn't score a goal in his last time out. It's not very often he goes a couple of games not scoring goals. And you said he needed one chance. Was it even a full chance? Was it as open as it seemed, or was that a more difficult goal than it actually looked like it was when he put it away what looked like so easily?
It is a difficult goal for any striker because, one, you have a defender in front of you. Two, you have to keep the ball down, and you're using the inside of your foot to also make sure that you're putting it in the right place. So you have to bank on the defender opening his legs, one, and two, putting it into the corner because the keeper can be a little bit, I guess, shielded by his player, not anticipating that you can go in that direction. And it's the ball is coming from the left to the right and you're opening up your hips. It's not easy. It's a very technical finish. And so that's what we've been accustomed to seeing from Raul Ruiz Diaz, because he's just so clinical, because he can take a half chance and do something with it, where a lot of strikers in this league can't. They just can't.
Yeah.
And he's that player. And that's why the Seattle Sounders have had so much success, because when you have a striker who can turn half chances into goals, but also you have a Nico Ladero, you have a Jordan Morris, you have a Christian Roldan. So you're dangerous on set pieces. You're dangerous from crosses, and you have a nine who creates so much space and doesn't even need space to score. That's what's special about this team.
Mm-hmm. And just got to mention, Anders, great cross, says great crossfield ball from Sounders legend Jackson Reagan. We'll see.
It was.
Soon to be.
It was.
Yeah. Joey, I know you would appreciate that too. Center back there.
Oh, yeah. Got Anders, great shout there in the chat. I mean, Jackson Reagan, I thought was really good in this game and has been excellent for Seattle large stretches of the season, for large stretches of the season so far. He's comfortable on the ball at right center back, and he's done, I think, an admirable job filling in for Jaimar, which is a pretty high bar. He's not Jaimar, and he's not a perfect player, but he has that switch in the build to the Seattle goal, which is a lovely sequence. Charlie, you walked us through the finish there beautifully. The ball in from Nuhu as well is wonderful. The little combination play. It's not exactly combination play, but I guess it's a 2v1 overload on that left side between Nuhu and Rusnak, who's in that eight spot. And I really like that for certain things, and his work on the ball from deeper areas is certainly one of those things. So, yeah, man, this Sounders team is scary, Jordan.
They're especially since they're starting to click. And for them, maybe starting to click at the exact time that they want to, because when you look at the trophy case, there's really one trophy that's missing, and they have the potential to go there. And a lot of that has to do with the man of the match. Stefan Frey was absolutely ridiculous. This is exactly what we've come to know of him as well. Connor Urquijo on Twitter asked us, is Stefan Frey's performance worth consideration for U.S. men's national team by Greg? In parentheses, the answer is yes. Well, we'll get to that in a second. But Frey makes 7 saves. And these weren't just like the save coming into him. These were ridiculous saves. Joe, what was the best save out of all of those? Can you pinpoint one?
For me, it's that save on the Magno shot, on the pass that Tati feeds into Magno. It's Tavon Gray to Tati on the right side, then Tati to Magno to spell out that sequence there. And it's in the 73rd minute. It's a big moment, right? NYCFC already have one. They're pushing for a second to really get themselves back into this tie. And Stefan Frey steps out. He closes down the space, which is exactly what you want to do in that moment, right? You want to make that angle. You want to eliminate that angle, right? And make that shot as difficult as you can for the attacking player. Frey closes space, and I think he gets it with his leg as he's sort of like awkwardly sliding in. It's beautiful in its own purely chaotic kind of way. And in terms of this game and the momentum here, absolutely massive from Stefan Frey. He saved this game and maybe saved Seattle's CCL campaign. NYCFC had like 3.75 XG, right? And a lot of that coming in the second half. Seattle didn't create much, and they never were going to do that coming into this game because of the scoreline coming in. But without Stefan Frey in net, Seattle's not coming out of this semifinal.
Yeah.
So credit to Stefan Frey. We cannot give him enough credit.
I think that's the time that I said, why would anyone be a goalkeeper on the watch along? But we got to have some of those. We got to have the brave people to play in goal. Charlie, what was the best save, in your opinion, that Stefan Frey made?
I'm going to agree with Joe, but I'm also going to give a shout out to Kellen Rowe because he had the double save.
Yes.
Where he was, that was a guaranteed goal. And Kellen Rowe came up big. And so you just look at the Seattle side, and there's not too many MLS teams that can beat you, whether it's sitting back and countering and then also in possession and then also using the wide areas and in their outside backs, dead balls around the box.
Diversity of it is ridiculous.
It's a complete team. It really is. And the depth. You talk about Jackson Reagan, who in the world anticipated him coming in and playing the way he has. I mean, that just, I guess, proves that they have so much depth. And it's a team that I think we can all get behind. And like I said last night, I think they do it.
Yeah. Well, Anders is wearing his Sounders. You see how I just brought them two together? Did he plan that? Anders and Sounders. He's wearing his Seattle jersey today, his Jimi Hendrix one. So this seems fitting that everybody should get behind this team. The chance to win CCL is right there for them to grab. You mentioned the save. We talked about the saves from Frey, but the double block from... oh my gosh, who are you just talking about?
Kellen Rowe.
Kellen Rowe's double block off the line. Seattle had they blocked 8 shots too. So it wasn't just a one-man performance in net. There were so many people blocking shots. They thanked the post too for that double doink that it had. It was a good performance, I think, from Seattle, a different performance, a gutsy one that we're going to have to see from them. And breaking news, CONCACAF just sent out the times for the final. The first leg is going to be played in Mexico City on Wednesday, April 27th at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. So another late one for us over here on the East Coast, followed by the Rave Green hosting the second leg at Lumen Field on Wednesday, May 4th, 7 p.m. Pacific time, when extra time all is going to be over there.
That's
hanging
late
out,
that's late
chatting, and then going to watch this game. Okay, really quick, I think we have to mention just how funny this game is as well. Just the tactics, the extra tactics you have to bring in to waste some time when it really, really matters. I feel like Seattle did that really well. Hagen D. Kuster on Twitter was saying, can we just talk about the wasting time attempts? They were cringeworthy. But I think that seasoned Liga MX players are going to do that too. It's some dark arts, Charlie. This will pay off. They play their first game in Mexico City. You've been there. You've played there. This is maybe the differentiation factor that Seattle has over other MLS teams, is knowing that, all right, there's some extracurriculars that have to go into this too.
Yeah, I mean, they've played León in this round. So it's not that they haven't done it before. They've already gone to Mexico and played at León and came away with a draw. To come away with a point on the road, even if they lost 1-0, I think the advantage would be still to Seattle. But they have players who have played in Mexico. They have players who have that experience to get a result on the road. It's really going to be a grind and a commitment, mm-hmm. but they've done it before. Had they not done it, then you'd say, oh, there's all these question marks. And Pumas, they know the pressure's on them to get a strong result going into that second leg.
Yeah.
Because Seattle playing at home at Lumen Field, that's going to be a beast for mm-hmm. any Liga MX's team. So, yeah, I mean, this is a team that's ready to go and they have depth. Yeah. So I would expect them to not just sit back. I don't think they're just going to sit back. I think they are going to try and play. And I think it comes down to that transition game. When they do win the ball, it's like going forward and trying to get in behind and using Jordan Morris and his pace.
It's a different animal playing Pumas than New York City FC. And I think that you're right. I do think they're going to play a little bit more on this away leg. One last question that was sent in to us on Twitter before we get to the question I think that everybody wants to know from you both. Joe, Jim Kim wants to know, which result will shock you more for leg one of CCL final? A dominant Pumas win or a dominant Sounders win?
Oh, it's a phenomenal
shock
question.
Factor.
I'm not sure we're going to see either of those, right? I'd be shocked if we saw a dominant performance from either team. I think a dominant Pumas performance would surprise me more. It hurts me to say that, right? I know I'm opening myself up to disappointment. That is the free space when we talk about CCL. But Pumas, I mean, they're not a particularly threatening team in Liga MX right now. Of course, credit to them for making this run, but they're 10th in the league. I mean, they are not unbeatable. The Revs already proved that earlier on in this competition, right, with a 3-0 win. So there will be an opportunity here for Seattle. The reason why I'd be more shocked if we saw either a dominant performance from either team is that's not really how Seattle does things, right? Mm-hmm. They might dominate you for stretches on the break. They might dominate you for sequences in possession. But this is not a team that's really built to really control games and put in a theoretically dominant performance. So I think as far as how this game's going to flow, it's going to be Seattle going and they're going to sit in a 4-4-2 mid block. They might press here and there like they did in this game. They probably won't press as much as they did in the first leg against NYCFC, but they'll do a lot of defensive work. They'll try to hit on the break and they'll try to have some facilitating possession play through central midfield. But I don't think either team's really going to go out there and dominate. Still, I think Seattle might have the edge in this whole darn thing, especially because they host that second leg at home in Seattle.
All right, you guys, is this the year? Is it going to happen? Charlie's smirking. He is. How can it not, right? I feel like this is a little bit of...
Oh, I'm knocking on wood right there. I'm knocking on wood with that comment.
Hey, I don't believe in that, so you do you. But I think that this Seattle team is... They are finding their rhythm at the right time. They've got a couple games before they go and play in the finals. They can add to this rhythm, this cohesion that they play in. Charlie, are they going to do it? Is this the year?
It is the year. They're going to do it. I mean, even with the Revs, when they lost 3-0 at Pumas, they had opportunities. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Adam Buxa and Gustavo Bo and Jozy Altidore, for that matter, are not as seasoned finishers as Raul Ruiz Diaz. And I think that could be the difference in a leg like this.
Yeah.
Like we just said, yeah. he doesn't need a full chance, just a half chance, and you get that road goal. We know what Nico Ladero is capable of, even Freddie Montero off the bench. So I think they get it done. And in the second leg, I expect a dominant performance at home. I would be shocked if it wasn't a dominant performance from Seattle in the second.
Yeah, Lumenfield is going to be popping. I feel like that place, it really is. It's going to be the place to be. Joe, you agree with Charlie? You think this is going to be the year?
I do think it's going to be the year. I'm not as bold as Charlie is to go out and say a dominant performance at home in that second leg. But, I mean, you think about the last two CCL finals that MLS teams have been in, right? You had LAFC back in 2020, and you had Toronto FC, back in 2018, right, against Chivas. This, to me, feels like the best situation yet for an MLS team, at least in recent years, to go out there and win with the talent Seattle has. No, they haven't been playing all that well in actual league play here, but they've clearly done well in CCL, done well enough. They've managed games. Pumas, like I mentioned earlier, is not as threatening as some of the teams that MLS teams have had to go off against in CCL before. So I think there's a lot of encouraging signs. If you're Seattle, if you're the players, if you're Brian Schmetzer, I think you're feeling pretty good headed into that, May 4th final at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just one more reminder, about 13 days away, April 17th. April 27th. Can't read that number, right? is the first leg of the CCL final to Mexico City. This will be a fun one to watch. I think we're all prepping and hopeful. That's a good way to put it, right? We think that this could be the year. All right, should we talk about some news around MLS, some happenings? I know we previewed the show of saying, okay, there's some DP signings, but a defensive midfielder, FC Cincinnati, go out and get a D mid, Obinna Obodo. And this is a Cincinnati team. They're going to Atlanta this weekend. They will play at 6 p.m. on ESPN+. He's a 25-year-old Nigerian. He comes from the Super League in Turkey. And some of these stats for him are exactly, I feel like, what this Cincinnati team needs. He leads in the Turkish Superliga. He leads tackles. He leads ball recoveries. He has 772 pressures this season. He has top of the league in interceptions. This is a guy, Joe, that could fit this roster in Cincinnati so well. I know you love digging into these new players coming into MLS. What do you know about him that can help this FC Cincinnati team, and maybe what MLS fans need to know about him?
First of all, yeah, elite name. Jordan, you nailed it. Obinna Obodo is just immediately a top-tier MLS name. He's exactly the profile that you would expect from Chris Albright's first major signing as GM in Cincinnati, right? He is a rangy, ground-covering central defensive midfielder. He's probably not a guy who's going to do a ton of nice stuff in possession, but that's not what Cincy care about from those guys. We've seen a 3-4-1-2 shape from Pat Noonan in possession with Lucho Acosta behind two strikers, and Brandon Vasquez has been doing a great job leading that line. It's been Junior Moreno and Yuya Kubo as the two number eights, and those players have done fine to start this season, but there's room for quality there. Certainly there's room for quality, and they don't have yet a ton of depth in those spots, right? Yuya Kubo is just a relatively recent shift to a central midfielder in the first place, and Junior Moreno was acquired just before the season started, right? So there is room to improve in that spot. They need depth there. The one ding on this move, and I do like it, I think, again, it fills a position of need, it gives them quality in central midfield, and it fits tactically how Pat Noonan wants to play as Philadelphia Union Midwest Edition, right? That's what it is. I think the one thing I might ding here is it feels like, with that profile, I know $3 million isn't a ton. That's the fee here, I think. It's not a ton, but it kind of feels like you can get some quality that can do something similar within MLS, right? Bob Bradley basically did that with Latif Blessing. Judson, I was reading through some thoughts from American Soccer Analysis folks, and Judson in San Jose is not really playing But that's all he does is go out and win the ball. And I think he'd be a perfect fit for the Cincinnati team. So I don't want to be the wet blanket here. I like the signing in general. If they're going to spend the money, go for it. That's all fine by me. But generally speaking, I think this is a good addition from Chris Albright.
Well, it's nice just talking about players within MLS too that can be similar profiles that people can relate to. Okay, sure. He's going to maybe look like these types of players. But Charlie, we've been here before with FC Cincinnati. This isn't a new thing. They're signing big players. There's a lot of hype. But then... it actually isn't there. Is there a difference here? You've got Albright, you've got Noonan, them working together. How is this a different scenario?
Well, it's different from years past with Cincinnati just because these two work together already in Philadelphia as far as Noonan being an assistant coach and Chris Albright kind of being the assistant general manager. So they are trying to work together to bring in players that fit what Noonan's trying to accomplish on the field. So when you have a sporting director and a head coach aligned, that makes a big difference from a sporting director who's just going out there and saying, I got you this player, make it work. And so when I look at the players that were brought in this year, it's a lot of the players that they were familiar with. They bring in Ray Gattis. I mean, Ray Gattis had retired, but they said, hey, we need somebody in the locker room who gets it, who understands the philosophy, who understands how to bring a team together and how to hold players accountable and to kind of lead by example. That's Ray Gattis. Then you brought in Elvis Powell, who came over from the Union. You know, Tyler Blackett, I don't know if that's going to work out. You know, still yet to be determined. You keep Harris Mandujan in because you've had him in Philadelphia as well. So there's a lot of familiar faces. For the Cincinnati team, you still have to get better. And I think they have improved from the start of the year, but you have to make the players that you have already on your roster, you have to get them to improve and give them confidence. And that starts with the tactics and then the results that you're able to get. So yeah. This team is still a work in progress. And I don't think we know necessarily where they are. I think Obina is a signing. I've seen some of his tape. He does get forward. And this might be a player that, yeah, he wins balls, but he gets all over the place. Sometimes that can work against the team because of shape and balance. And it's not like they have rangy midfielders as well who can cover ground. So if he's out and no one has kind of held down the fort, if he's out of position, then it could be a challenge. So I'm interested to see how this works out.
That's a good point. And I do think this is a progressing Cincinnati squad, I think, which we haven't talked about in all ever. They do seem like they're progressing in a positive way. They had a couple wins already. They're coming off of two losses, playing an Atlanta side in Atlanta this weekend, who are going to want to win, too. So I feel like this is going to be a good test for them. We'll see how Obina fits into that squad this season. We got some scoop from Tommy Scoops too. Tom Bogart reporting Vancouver in advanced talks to sign defensive midfielder Andres Cubas. Vancouver goes to Montreal this weekend, 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. As far as Cubas, he's a 25-year-old Paraguayan, plays for Nîmes in France. This seems like the right piece. When you're talking about Vancouver, and this is a team who really wowed us in the last half of last season, really towards the end, has started to find a little bit more of their form. I think disappointed of the result against Portland over the weekend because they did have some good run of play. But playing in this 3-4-1-2 or this 3-4-2-1 formation, they need defensive midfielders. Right now, they're currently playing with Berhalter or Tybert. Baldissimo has played in there a little bit too. Joe, Cubas could fill a position that Vancouver need.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And a lot of this is copy and paste from the Cincy talk, right? Another rangy defensive kind of midfielder. Maybe Cubas is a little more progressive with some of his passing. And he's also probably played at a higher level, thinking back to his time with Talleres in Argentina and coming through the Boca system in Argentina as well. I mean, I think he's someone who can add quality to a team that needs quality, right? And maybe the most important part of the field. Tybert, Berhalter, even Owusu, those guys aren't game changers. And I think we've learned that already. Berhalter's young, of course, so there's time. And of course, those players can still add things. But giving another boost in that midfield, I think, is going to be extremely helpful for Vanni Sartini, a team that just needs quality. And a team that admittedly has made moves in some attacking positions, right? You have Ryan Gauld, you have Pedro Vite, who I like a lot. Both of those players, I think, are really skilled guys. Having someone like Kubas who can do the dirty work behind them and clean up some of those messes that are naturally going to happen when you're a creative attacker, when you've got a pair of creative attackers out there. I think this move makes a ton of sense for Vancouver. I like it. I like it, guys.
Yeah. This is a team who maybe needs some stability. They're giving up 12 goals on the season, but they're playing a Montreal side who leads a league with the number of goals they've given up with 15. So it should be an interesting matchup between these two teams this weekend. And a Vancouver squad. Both of these teams, I think, Charlie, have been exciting to watch. At least you know you're going to get some goals, too, when you're watching Montreal right now.
Yes, I really like where Montreal's heading. And I think you have to give credit to Wilfred Nancy and what he's been able to do since Thierry Henry left just before the start of the season. And he's had to build this roster and figure out, tinker with some of the younger academy players, bringing players in. And I really like where this team is headed. Just from the attacking phase of the game, I think defensively still a work in progress, as well as the goalkeeper position. But in terms of playing forward and creating opportunities, you have to love what he's been able to do.
Yeah. And just speaking of Montreal and how they go forward, it'll be a challenge for this Vancouver squad and maybe a good look at why they bring in a holding midfielder like Kubas and why that is a spot that they're looking to add some depth to. All right.
I will say this, though. I don't think Kubas is necessarily the type of player they needed. I think he's maybe a higher quality player in terms of when you're comparing him to a Berhalter or a Russell Tybert, but he's not a Wobodo, someone who's getting all over the pitch and a tough tackler and has pace and he's rangy. Because nowadays in MLS, when you have a six who is more of a general, who's a tough tackler, wins balls, you usually have an advantage because then you don't need two.
You need like one. Jose Martinez. Jose, you just Martinez. Have one. Yeah.
And in this case, they have two ball-playing midfielders, but they don't keep possession. So it doesn't really work. And if they're on the front foot, it's not like they have players who can break up tackles and cover ground. That's been, an Achilles heel for Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Because they do a good job of getting forward in the transition game. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in. And then when he does play, if they still have enough defensively with him on the field.
Yeah, that's a good point, Charlie. I like where your head's going at there too, especially since we saw Vanni Sartini at the beginning of the year play a 3-1-4-2 with just a lone holding midfielder under all those midfielders. Yeah. So it's not like he wouldn't like that player profile that you were just speaking to. A lot of games still to talk about this weekend. Should we talk about these games that are going to be on national TV? I think it's time to dip into that. And we start off with a game Saturday, 3:30 p.m. San Jose hosts Nashville on Univision and TUDN. Guys, there is a lot to talk about here with this one. Matias Almeida is skipping press conferences now. San Jose just seems to be a team, I would say emotional, you know, a little bit of a mess. This has been an emotional start to the year. It's been an emotional few years for them. Couple of questions for you, Charlie. Is this season a lost season? And do you feel like it's possible to have these types of antics that Matias Almeida has, but to still keep the locker room?
You never want to say it's a lost season, especially at this stage in the game, because things can change. You could bring in a new, you could sign in a massive player. You could, you know, go on this crazy run. Tactics could miraculously change. But I will say this, they're heading in the wrong direction and they're heading towards the season being a loss. They're much closer to that than they are to being in competition for a playoff spot. So it's disheartening if you're a player in that locker room and your coach could care less about press conferences or shows kind of a lack of commitment. Because when you look at this team, it is almost like they're just going game to game and there's not a master plan. And I think Matias Almeida has talked about it in press conferences, like, hey, I it'd be nice to be able to have a nice transfer kitty so I could go out and sign some players. And you know, when you're taking shots at the ownership, you're taking shots at your club, it usually doesn't bode well for you. And it kind of states where he is and mm-hmm. just kind of where the club is. So from my standpoint, the San Jose team is kind of lost right now. Not to say that they can't find their way, but at the moment they're lost. And if I'm playing against San Jose, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Because it is, you know, just that when you're lost, you're kind of grabbing at straws, trying to get something out of it. And it can lead, it's just a little dysfunctional on the field for them. I think one thing that you take away from last weekend, though, is Jeremy Obobese was such a positive in that game against Houston. He gets two goals from open play. Good goals, too. One with his left foot, one with his head between center backs. Really nice run there. Joe, have you noticed anything different? Was it just this specific game that San Jose is doing some different things going forward? Or how did they execute so brilliantly to get Jeremy Obobese in the right spots there against Houston?
Well, Jeremy Obobese, for his part, does a lot of the hard work in the box, right? I mean, Charlie's going to appreciate a lot of what Obobese does, at least in certain parts of the game. He's really effective with his movement, right? I mean, that was the case on both of those goals. He sees space. He either hangs out in space that's already there, or he makes his own space. And he was really good at that against Houston. The other part that has to go with it, though, is the service. So Obobese had six shots against Houston in open play. He had six shots all told for the entire rest of the season leading up to that game. So six shots in five games, six shots in one game. So I don't know that it was anything massively different tactically from San Jose. They got him the ball, right? They got forward and they played nice cutbacks. They had some good deliveries. They had some nice crosses. Giving Obobese service is key because he's a guy who does a lot with the service you give him. San Jose haven't been doing a whole lot of that this year. That's part of the issue. And real quick, one beat on sort of the more macro San Jose conversation here. I think it's also got to be discouraging if you're a player or if you're really anyone in the San Jose organization. You know the clock's ticking, right? You know the clock's ticking to when eventually you're going to have some sort of a regime change and things are going to be different, right? And you also know that tactically what Matias Almeida is doing is almost totally unique in world soccer, right? There's maybe two or three other managers at high levels across the world that do what Almeida does with his man marking and with his really man-oriented defensive systems. You know, as soon as he's gone, and that will happen eventually. Who knows what will be the driving force of that. But when Almeida is no longer in charge of this team, what do you have to show for it, right? Like tactically, what can you build on? It's got to be some minor possession things, but defensively you're reworking a system. We're seeing this right now with Leeds after Bielsa left, and at least Bielsa got them somewhere, right? The challenge is you haven't won a trophy under Matias Almeida. And when you do end up with a different coach, it's kind of like those last few years under Almeida were just a blip and they didn't really get you anywhere. So I think that's also got to be demoralizing if you're a player or a part of that San Jose group.
And it's a San Jose squad who brought some players in. Jamiro Montero, they brought in Gregouche, who gets an assist this weekend. These are players who can help them in especially attack, distribution, being creative going forward. It's one of those things that's hard, Charlie, right? Because you got to listen to what the coach says, but when you're on the field trying to execute this game plan, it's difficult knowing that, okay, how do we do what we know we can do and almost come together more as a unit saying, all right, we've got to, it seems at times, got to do this a little bit on our own.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it comes down to how many leaders do you have in the locker room? Because you have leaders who lead by example, but you have leaders who are vocal and bringing teams together. I think I always found that if there is a moment where the coach isn't getting things right, guys are disgruntled, guys are beat up, the only way to overcome that is almost like you're playing in spite of your coach at times. Mm. But the way to do it is by having guys who are central in the locker room to do things outside of the team's facilities, outside of practice, outside of training, go bowling together, go to movies, go to a bar, like doing things together as a team to build that chemistry and the camaraderie and kind of get that feeling back that, man, I enjoy my teammates. I enjoy competing with them and we got to get over the hump together. That's usually what gets the team going again. So you kind of put the coach to the side, you put his tactics to the side and you say, we're going to go out there and we're going to do it as a team. We're going to do it together. And usually that hard work and motivation gets you over the hump.
Yeah, we'll see who writes that story on San Jose coming back together after they went bowling as a team. But I like it, Charlie. I do. I understand the sentiment. I really do. And I think it is. Who's going to step up and lead this team? Who's it going to be? Because I feel like it's not coming from the coach right now. So they've got a task to play Nashville, but they're at home. This is a Nashville squad who is almost done with those 8 road games. They have 2 left in this long road trip. Their new stadium looks so nice, by the way. Hopefully we all can get down there at some point. Okay, this season, to start off with 8 games on the road, potential 24 points there to be had. They already have 10 points from 6 road games. If they win this weekend, Charlie, they get half of those points available. They'll have more than half of those points that were available in those 8 games. And then if they win against LA, of those 8 games, they will have taken home 2/3 of the points available, all on the road. That has to be, I mean, to look at those numbers and to see the potential, you have to be, Gary Smith has to be sitting there just being super pleased with his team.
Oh, and he should be, because if you looked at the first game of the year, to win on the road in Seattle.
Right.
Incredible. I mean, that kind of set the tone for this group, saying, hey, we have to play a lot of the away games to start this season, but this is the expectation now. We went down to up to Seattle and won on the road, a very difficult place to play. A shutout, a 1-0 win. They go to Minnesota, another difficult place to play. They get a point. Now, the Dallas one, I mean, it was inevitable. You were going to drop points somewhere. And then they won on the road at Nashville, and then they win at Sporting Kansas City. Both teams, it's not like those two teams are setting the league ablaze. But you have to love their approach and their mentality, and they've always been defensively sound. This team is only going to get better. When they hit that home form and in that brand new stadium, it's going to be a special season. You can sense that. And this team has come together well. I think when you look at what Mike Jacobs has done, putting the right pieces to the puzzle together, and the way that Gary Smith has coached this group, I have
well drilled
my hat up.
Yeah. Yep,
well drilled.
Well drilled. You can see the sparkle in their eyes with those pictures and videos coming out too at Geodis Park, and just what they get to come home to and to have a home is going to be so special for them. But this is a team who's not scoring a ton of goals, Joe. They probably didn't expect that playing the first 8 games of the season on the road. A player who's maybe finding a little bit more of his groove is Randal Leal. I think there's always been a lot of expectation from him. How can he affect this team? A lot of that has fallen on Hany Mukhtar. Do you feel like he looks at all different this season? Do they need him to pull some more of that weight or carry some more of that weight? Or for Nashville, do you feel like it's keep doing what you're doing until you get home, and then maybe you can start thinking about more ways to score goals?
Sure. I mean, your focus is, of course, on getting to the rest of this road trip and getting something out of it. Now you've already met your goal. Now do more, right? Like, take whatever you can off the table right now. But even through the road trip, right, at the beginning of the season, I think there's still opportunities for Nashville to develop their attacks and develop their tactical approach going forward. Defensively, they're still a very good team. They're one of the most sound defensive teams this year. I mean, they're a strong group. Going forward, though, that's been more of the challenge for this team in the past. We've already seen, Jordan, to your point about Randal Leal and about his role, we've already seen some changes even within this season. So they come out at the beginning of the year in a 4-4-2 diamond, and Leal is the 10, and he's got Mukhtar and Sapong ahead of him. And it, even in those games, it wasn't a pure diamond. It would flatten out defensively into more of a 4-4-2, a flat 4-4-2, and mm-hmm. Leal would still hang out on the right side sometimes. Now the shape has shifted a little bit to more of a 3-4-3 or a 3-5-2, depending on where Leal is on the right side of midfield. So he's either like this narrow right-sided winger, or he's more of a right-sided central midfielder with 2 other more defensive players behind him and to his left. I do think that role suits him. And Jordan, he's played well in moments this year. He's one of the best players in terms of chance creation this year so far. I still think there's room for him to improve some of his off-ball movement and some of his efficiency in those transition moments, but he's been productive, and I think Nashville need him to be, right? If they're trying to mm-hmm. go out here and win trophies, which should not be out of the question for this team this season, with the way they're built, they feel to me a lot like Seattle, in a team that you never really want to come up against in the MLS Cup playoffs. So I think there's an opportunity for them to do some real damage this year, and to do that, Mukhtar needs to be your star. Zimmerman can be your anchor in the back. Some good goalkeeping and other defensive performances as well will help this team. But you need something else. Sapong can score some goals, but Ake Loba was maybe supposed to be that guy. It seems like he's a long way off from that at this point. But yeah, somebody needs to do that job. Maybe it's Randa Leao. I'm not totally there yet, but he's done a lot of things well this season so far.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's the Seattle Sounders without Rui Diaz. Yeah. So, I mean, Hadi Mukhtar, fantastic. But you need a striker. If this club wants to go to a whole nother level, because they have all the other pieces, they need a striker who is going to be consistent and a consistent goal threat. They don't have that yet.
I don't know if you could hear that, but someone was banging the drum as you were saying that, just agreeing, just yeah. Right there with you, Charlie, right there with you. That game between San Jose and Nashville, 3:30 p.m. on Univision. Next game of the weekend, 10 p.m. Eastern time, FS1, Seattle hosting Miami. Miami coming off their first win of the season. You can see the emotions in that one. A lot of good celebrations. And their first hat trick ever in the history of their club. Leonardo Campana, he stepped in and had a day. Higuain was out with an injury. I don't know if I can do air quotes with that. We don't know. Apparent injury. If he's fit, if Higuain is fit, Charlie, this game against Seattle, are you starting him?
I'm not starting him. You can't start him after a hat trick from your striker. You go with the hot hand, and the team played better. That was obvious to me. Now, it also could work in a way where Higuain hasn't played well, one, and two, he hasn't worked hard. His work rate has been poor. This could be an instance where he either responds in a way that would suit this club, because you have to look at what's best for the club, short-term and long-term. It's already been stated that he's retiring after this season by his father. And then it's like, oh, no, that wasn't said. But we know what's happening here. So he can either go out and finish his career on a high, knowing that he gave everything, every ounce of what he had left for the rest of the season, which means he comes back in a positive manner. And the response is, I'm going to work my tail off. I'm going to support my teammates, and I'm going to show that with my work rate, not only with my finishing, but also with my work rate. And I'm going to be positive with my mannerisms. Mm-hmm. Or he says, oh, you're going to go with Campagna again, and I'm healthy. I quit. I give up. And it, maybe it's not, I'm not going to step on the field, but the reaction is negative, and he continues to do what he does, and he doesn't work hard off the ball. He doesn't support his teammates, doesn't support the coach's decision, and that will create a massive hole and void within the locker room.
Right. It's up to him. Yeah, it's up to him. And I think that's the expectation is always going to be high with a player like Gonzalo Higuain, because we know the internal competitor within him. We've seen it for years and years and years, and how he has been successful at the highest levels. Well, now can he be successful in a different role? I think he has to take on some leadership responsibilities within this team, and understand that it might look a little different. His work rate might have to be a little different. His body language might have to be a little different, but it is up to him. Joe, this Miami team, I feel like over the last few games even, they've simplified so much. I feel like Phil Neville gets some credit here, because at the beginning of the season, it was like, how do we play in a 3-back and a 5-back and Breck Shea is a center back? And it was a lot of shifting around of things. And I think it was confusing for the team to have to shift every game with responsibilities for the given position that they were playing. It seems more simplified over the past couple of games, even more so this last game. Did you feel that with this Miami squad? And do you think that that's going to help them going into this game against the Sounders?
I do feel that. And I'm not one to heap credit or praise onto Phil Neville for what he's done in Miami. But to be fair to him, some of the Breck Shea stuff was at least partially necessitated by injuries and some other weird stuff happening with the squad. So maybe there's a half point back for him.
No,
there.
But, I mean, don't even.
Charlie says no. Don't Charlie's even. Shaking his head.
A little credit to simplify. You can't even give a little credit to simplify things.
Charlie's coming.
I'm just saying a little, guys. Okay.
I'll give him a little credit. I think things are simple. And to be honest, it's a little simpler when Higuain's not in the lineup. I think, you know, this conversation about do you start him or Campana, might not actually be the right conversation to be having. The conversation is, do you start Higuain and Campana, right? Mm. I don't think there's any way Campana comes out of the lineup. Higuain started alongside Campana like four times this season, three times this season. It's something that Phil Neville is clearly willing to do. But Jordan, to your point, maybe it's better for this team to go all the way back to basics. And Higuain's role is to be the super sub off the bench, right? You know, they sort of tried him out as a number 10, trying to be like his brother in MLS. And that wasn't good, right? I mean, it was beautiful when Higuain's on the ball because he's great on the ball. But for the 99% of the rest of the game, it's not really advantageous for your team. So I think they have simplified things. I think it does work for them. I'm not sure exactly that they're going to be favorites in this game. I think Seattle will rest a lot of folks, and even then I'd still probably put a few fake dollars on Seattle in a game like this. But I'll be interested to see what happens with Miami. Do they continue to simplify and keep things just a bare bones 4-3-3 or a bare bones 4-2-3-1, depending mm-hmm. on the alignment? Do they go to the back three? There are certainly tactical questions around this team. I'm not sure that win over the Revs is a great sign of things to come, but it certainly was a positive getting their first win of the year.
Right. Briefly with Seattle, because we've chatted about them a lot this episode already. Coming off CCL, is there a little fatigue there? Is there emotional high coming off of that? We've got a few players, Charlie, that are coming back from injury. Ladero, Rui Diaz, they've gotten the most minutes that they've had yet. But I do think there is something to be said about how much do you rest them versus how much do you keep this team cohesive, feeling just the way that they can perform at home. You kind of want to ride that a little bit. What's your feeling about how much those players play and how much you need to keep the group the same for this game against Miami?
I don't think you need to keep this group the same.
All right, fair enough.
Miami. It's just because of this. One, Rui Diaz has put some minutes on his legs, and mm-hmm. you saw him cramping again. You know, they pushed him to the 87th minute, the first leg. This leg was around 82, 83 where he started cramping. I'd give him this game off. Maybe he comes in as a substitute, but primarily you want to start resting your guys. And Ladero, give him some time off. Jordan Morris, give him some time off. You know, your attacking players. Christian Roldan, it seems like he's a robot. He doesn't need the time. But you want to give these guys a little bit of a break, because that's the part of man management is, yes, you could possibly play a start and play 60 minutes against Inter Miami, but do we need to do that?
Right.
No. This team is already in sync. They already understand each other's tendencies. It's not like you're going to lose anything. So at this point, you got to focus on recovery, and that's going to be a big thing, because you need everyone healthy, especially your older vets who have gone through a little bit of some injury scares and issues. Ladero and Rui Diaz in particular, Jordan Morris, get them their rest now. So it's a favorable schedule. You're playing home against Inter Miami. They're not the strongest opponent as well.
You could San Jose could, after that.
And San Jose, exactly. So yeah. you can afford to rest some key guys. We know what Will Bruin can do in this league. He's had success, especially mm-hmm. at home. You talk about
Montero.
You know, Montero, Kellen Rowe. These mm-hmm. are guys who you can plug in and they can still win these games. So,
right.
Seattle are in a good place.
Yeah. The depth is there for Seattle, and we'll see if the Roldan robots get the starting nod as well. Sunday, we wrap up the games on national TV on ESPN. LAFC take on SKC, 4 p.m. Eastern time. LAFC coming off their first loss of the season. It was what we expect in a wild El Trafico game. We gotta love those. Do we go Carlos Vela? Is that what we want to talk about here? Do we feel like he looks back and engaged and dipping into that?
I would say, yeah, he does. But I'd put it on Steve Cherundolo, the manager.
Yeah.
Because they look like they've been able to fix some of the defensive issues. And it seems to me that this team have come together in a positive way. The spirit seems like it's back.
Yeah.
I think they lost a lot of key pieces towards the end of Bob Bradley's campaign there. And, you know, you whether it's Marc-Anthony Kay, whether it's, you know, a couple of injuries, Diego Rossi,
Atuesta.
Things kind of started to drop off. It seems like this group is moving in the right direction. So with Carlos Vela happy, that plays a big part in it, of course.
Yeah. Joe, Steve Cherundolo came in here and maybe he doesn't have a lot of wildly different ideas than Bob Bradley. Maybe some similarities there, or I think everybody can notice that. But what has he done to this team to allow them to be successful so early on and really have an opportunity to win yet another game and only go out of week seven potentially with just one loss under their belt?
Like you said, Jordan, I don't think much has changed for LAFC. There's a couple of really small things. The midfield, I think, rotates a little bit different with Acosta in that group. He'll sometimes sit deeper than I think we saw from Cifuentes or Mark Anthony Kay when he was still with LAFC last season, or whoever was playing Latif Blessing as one of those eights. I think the rotations are a little different in the fullbacks, and this could be partially necessitated by some of the injuries and moves they've had. I mean, Kim Moon-Wan is not on this team anymore. The fullbacks are a little deeper, or at least they were in the first maybe four or five games of the season than we saw under Bob Bradley, but he also used wingbacks a lot last year, so that does change the positioning slightly. So, I mean, tactically, I guess we've seen the 4-3-3 game in, game out from Steve Cherundolo, which was not true of LAFC and Bob Bradley last season. But I don't think, Jordan, that we can attribute any of those little tactical things to the shift here for this team. I think it comes down a lot to mentality and getting a bit of a refresh in the coaching group, but also the personnel, right? I mean, Charlie, you already talked about the defensive issues maybe being ironed out a bit, and I think that's true. There have been fewer game-breaking errors, it feels like.
Goalkeeper.
The other thing
one.
I'll add, yeah. The other thing is goalkeeping. So last year they were just atrocious in goal, and this year Maxime Crépeau is been fine, and fine is all LAFC really need with the other talent they have. So Carlos Vela, I think, electric against Colorado. He's been okay for other stretches, doesn't look quite as energetic. He's not getting quite as many touches this year, but he comes up big in a couple moments, or nearly comes up big in El Tráfico. You can see the quality there. You can see the quality all over the field. Having competent goalkeeping and a cohesive tactical plan, which is what this team has, I think is going to keep them close to the top of the Western Conference pretty much all season long.
We've talked about defensive midfielders already on this show, and I personally, I've always liked Ilya. I like the way he plays. I like the way he sees the game. And I think one team that maybe wishes he still was on their team is SKC, who LAFC will face this weekend. A little ironic here that Ilya is really performing well. SKC struggling to figure out how to get performances, results. Defense looks fragile. Midfield looks fragile. Charlie, is this fixable? How is it fixable? What is going on? All of those things.
Well, I think we knew coming into the year, without Alan Pulido as a striker, this team was going to look different up top. And Daniel Shalloway, as good as he was last year, he's not your nine. He needs someone to play off of. And Johnny Russell, when you have those two dynamic wingers who come inside quite a bit, who can score goals, the play from your nine is so important, and being able to drop into certain spots and create space. Kyrie Shelton is a one-track mind, and that is just running in behind, and he's never been a solidified nine. He could be effective with his runs, but that it's one-dimensional. They need an Alan Pulido, someone who can score, who can drop out of the box, who can shoot from distance. They don't have that. And so you look at that, you look at their midfield. There's just a lot of things that need to be fixed. Now, they can be fixed. That's the thing. This is a Sporting Kansas City. Peter Vermes has been in this league forever. He's had so much success. You just have to kind of step back for a second and say, okay, maybe I have to readjust things. Maybe it comes with a formation change. Maybe it comes with giving a player a new opportunity to come into the midfield. Because a lot of these players he's had for a while. So sometimes it's a fresh legs. It's new ideas. So I would not give up on the Sporting Kansas City side.
It's still a long season to go, right? Long season. Well, if you want to catch that game, ESPN, 4 p.m. on Sunday, Eastern time, LAFC hosts Sporting Kansas City. All right, our ESPN games of the week. Joe, we're going to go to you first. Who are you picking? What other game are you going to keep your eye on closely here this weekend?
I'm excited for Red Bulls against FC Dallas Saturday, 7 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN+. These are two of the three most aggressive high-pressing teams in MLS. DC United's the other one in that top three. It's a new-look FC Dallas team with Nico Estevez molding this into the club version of the U.S. men's national team here in the United States. They're not great at creating chances yet. Alan Velasco felt like maybe was going to flip that around a bit and get them going. That hasn't quite been the case. I think they need a bit more out of their number eights creatively. They need a little bit more out of the wingers as well. Maybe getting Paul Areola back and fully integrated into this team will help. And then the Red Bulls, they've been very good this year, I think, for large stretches. They've also had some tough results, right? I mean, lost to Minnesota United, where Dane St. Clair stands on his head, right? I mean, that's just one example over the last month or so. There's certainly been others. They lose late against Montreal when Carlos Colonel makes a boo-boo out there in when he shouldn't be. So there's certainly issues there for this team. But I think both of these teams are incredibly entertaining. They're two of the teams that I like to watch most in MLS. I'm looking forward to this one. I honestly don't know who's the favorite. Red Bulls certainly have an edge at home, but I think this will be a well-played game between two teams that have pretty clear tactical ideas. And when I'm trying to pick out games to watch on ESPN+, those are some of the first filters I hit.
Red Bulls yet to win, though, at home this season, which is shocking, because I think the course of opening Red Bull Arena, they have had the best home record of anyone in MLS. I'm sure Anders is going to hit me up and say that's Seattle too, but I do think it's Red Bulls. I'm pretty sure that is correct, so we'll see. Yeah, is this the opportunity for Red Bulls to get that first home win? I'm going next. All right, Minnesota United hosting Colorado Rapids, 8 p.m. Eastern time. That's my game, because guys, I just love what Robin Fraser has done with this Colorado team. I know it's been talked about a lot. I think they were the better team against FC Dallas. They end up losing 3-1, but man, the way that they create going forward, their ability and willingness to use Austin Trusty as like a hybrid wing back, midfielder, center back, I don't even know what to call him. It's hard to defend. It is difficult. And I think Minnesota is going to be challenged. They've had a lot of changes in their back line. Metaner, I know, is back, so we'll see how many minutes he can get this weekend. But this matchup, I think, speaks a lot to can Colorado, after a really good start to the season, rebound and look good against a Minnesota team who is kind of waiting for Reynoso to show up and to be the player that they want him to be, and maybe some other players to carry some of that weight as well. So should be a good one. Minnesota United hosting Colorado Rapids on Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern time. All right, Charlie, you're going to round us up with your game of the weekend.
I'm going with the Columbus Crew taking on Orlando City at home. And so we talk about April games and, and their importance on the rest of the season. Typically not a big deal. But if you look at the Columbus Crew, what they did last year after winning MLS Cup in 2020, 2021 failing to make the playoffs. And we talked about, before the season, Caleb Porter typically never goes from playoffs to playoffs. It's usually playoffs to non-playoffs the following year. So where is the disconnect? How does that happen? How do you go from winning MLS Cup to not making the playoffs the following year with basically the same team? So this year, you have Lucas Zelarayán. When you have a player of that caliber in your squad, in your team, leading the midfield, there's no excuse. You surround them to have success. So this year has gotten off to a rocky start, I'd say. And for me, it comes down to a number of things, but in particular, the striker position.
Yeah.
Are you going with Jossie Zardes, the 30-year-old who's a U.S. men's national team in the player pool, a striker who's had success in this league, or Miguel Berry, who's 24 years old? And if you're looking at their stats, there's been 6 games played this year. Jossie Zardes has 1 start, but he has 4 short shots on target. You know what you get from Jossie every game. You don't go from elite goal scorer in Major League Soccer to, you're not ruthless enough. You don't have tattoos, right?
Neck tattoos.
That doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. Versus Miguel Berry, who's 24, who scores the first game of the year, hasn't scored since, so 5 starts out of 6 games, and only has 2 shots on target the whole season. For me, you go with the player who's going to give you the best chance to win. If I'm the Columbus Crew, you know Jossie Zardes, his game is getting in the box and finishing. That's it. He's not going to beat you on the dribble. He's not going to shoot from distance. He gets in the box, you supply crosses, and he scores. Mm-hmm. I think Miguel Berry, yes, he's scored goals in this league, especially towards the end of last year. But this year, he struggled. And it's kind of almost like that sophomore slump. You had some success. You come the following year, and it's hard to live up to those expectations now that they're placed on you. So that needs to be figured out. And this Columbus Crew team, if they lose at home to Orlando City, having lost to Nashville already at home, having tied the Red Bulls on the road, losing to Philly on the road, you tying San Jose Earthquakes, who have been disastrous this year on the road. You need a result to get this team going again, to believe. Because if they lose at Orlando City, I know it's in April. It's only April 16th. I still think this game has a huge importance on the rest of the year.
Really quick note.
Orlando.
Oh, go ahead.
Jordan. Orlando has a ton of quality as well. Like, this is not going to be an easy game for Columbus. Charlie, I'm with you. I would start Giassi. It's been difficult for Miguel Berry because, Jordan, you know this better than anybody, because of how deep teams defend against Columbus or have defended. I mean, it's brutal out there for them to try and break through some of these low blocks. I mean, the game against Nashville was certainly like that. There have been other games at times this season. So it's hard. And it's hard as a striker to find space. And it's been hard for Columbus and their wingers, especially to find windows to serve good balls into the box. Like I talked about earlier with San Jose finally doing with Jeremy Bobasse. But this Orlando team is good, right? Erkan Kara, I've been really impressed with him. I liked a lot of what I saw from him against Chicago. Facundo Torres has not figured things out yet, but his quality on the ball is, I mean, ridiculous, right? Pato has been very, very good on the right side and a little bit on the left as well. There's players. Mauricio Pereira as well is a creator. Like, Jordan, this is going to be a hard game for your crew.
Yeah, this is... This is a big one. And I think everybody talking about Caleb Porter's comments, what Charlie alluded to there, and we've talked about already on this podcast a little bit, is just asking for, he wants his forwards to have a few more scars, that the best forwards in MLS have neck tattoos. And I think he's speaking to that ruthlessness. And can we just say quick producer Anders note here? Current Golden Boot standings, Jesus Ferreira, no neck tattoos. Chicharito, no neck tattoos. Brandon Vasquez, no neck tattoos. Leonardo Campana, no neck tattoos. Sebastian Driussi, although a lot of tattoos, I don't think any on his neck. So just speaking to that ruthlessness, though.
Players aren't, they're not ruthless enough.
They're not ruthless. I think that in the end, what has been the most challenging when you speak about that position for Columbus, being so close to them and watching intently every minute of these games multiple times, is there's been opportunities for both of them to put it away and make that their spot. Then they've missed some point blank, open net. You have to score those opportunities. So will one of them show that? I think that that's kind of what's being asked. And it's a difficult position to be in. Charlie, I know you've been there, being the first player, being the second player, and how you manage that. But there's a lot to talk about with this. And I like the conversation around it.
You know, it comes down to a striker's confidence. And sometimes it's on the striker to develop your own confidence. But there are occasions where you need a support. You need support from the coaching staff, support from your teammates. And if you're not getting it, it's tough to get out of that rut. And I look at Jossie Zardes. He goes on the national team. He gets his chance. He doesn't take it. It doesn't perform. And that sends him crashing down into that rock bottom confidence level for a striker that all strikers go through in your career. You always go through it. It's how fast can you get out of it? And this is an instance where you got to do whatever you can as a coach. And I think when you're thrown out, you got to have a neck tattoo. You got to be ruthless. That obviously doesn't apply to Jossie Zardes, and never has. And he still had success in this league. So if you're trying to throw stuff out in the media to get them going, sometimes that can work. But also sometimes players can look at it and say, what is he talking about? It works against you in a way. Because then guys start in the locker room like, do you see that quote? Like, what is he talking about? So I think from this perspective, you're looking at two players. Jossie Zardes, if you're not going to trade him and get value for him, then you have to play him. He's going to give you your best chance to win with this group of players. So trust in him, give him the confidence, and get going again. Because at the end of the day, this team needs results. They need to win. Yeah. You can talk and talk, and you hang up your hat on that MLS Cup 2 years ago, but this league is quickly changing, and it's what can you do for me now? And I think that's what I love about this league, is there's expectations and there's demands. And if you don't meet them, hey, we're going to let you know. And the league's going to let you know. And the ownership group, they're hungry. No one's going to just be satisfied with just like mediocre play. Everyone's competing for championships. And if you don't figure it out with your team, even if you've had in the past and it's currently not working, then I think we're going to see, things start to heat up.
Yeah. There are expectations. And one thing you can expect to see on Saturday is me. I'll be on that show. So 7 p.m. Eastern Time, crew.
Yes.
Versus City. Do you see how I did that? You guys? Yeah, I know. Okay, last thing from the mailbag. Let's just talk about Sanford sent us in. Atlanta United have been Open Cup champions now since 2019. Will they hold the title for a record fourth breaking year in a row? Their first game as all MLS teams come into the round, the third round, this week, April 19th and 20th are those third round games, all of those games on ESPN Plus. I like that. I feel like that's who knows? Joe, the season for Atlanta isn't going well. Do they kind of, I don't know, just say, all right, well, this is an opportunity to win a trophy. Maybe we kind of throw some more irons in this fire.
Yeah, and with Gonzalo Pineda and his experience in Seattle, and you can see the mindset very clearly with the Sounders, it's we're going for everything at once. We're not just going to pick and choose what we're going for here. We could see something similar from Pineda and Atlanta United. I don't know that they have the depth now, especially with Joseph's health way up in the air, right? Another, you know, knee cleaning out procedure. Jordan, you know, unfortunately, way too much about all of that stuff. Alonso's out, right? I mean, it's not the same team without him, and Emerson Hyman's still not really involved in this group, so they've been dealing with injuries and trying to get new players acclimated. What's Jago Almada going to be able to do in this team? And we don't know the answers to those questions yet. Mm-hmm. I don't see Atlanta United as a real trophy contender, but at the same time, in one-off knockout-style games, anything can happen. Still, I think I'd probably take the field in this conversation. Yeah.
Anything can happen in Open Cup. We've already seen it a little bit this year. A rematch happened. This is the round where all MLS teams start to enter. Charlie, that's your Tuesday and Wednesday night. You watching some of those games?
Yes, of course. Always.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, stay tuned to figure out which ones Charlie is going to watch. Guys, this has been, I mean, so much fun getting to chat with you guys, all MLS, everything from CCL to Open Cup. So thanks for joining me.
Yeah, Jordan, you killed it. Way to conduct. You're the midfield maestro of this group.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. Well, you guys helped me on both ends, defending and scoring. So I appreciate that. It's been so much fun. Thanks for tuning in to Extra Time. Make sure you check out all of those games over the weekend, and the guys will be back on Monday to talk about everything that happened in week 7 of MLS action.